Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. We are fresh off of, or like a few hours after, doing our first ever Reddit mailbag slash AMA. That was a lot of fun. A lot of responses coming in on the Heat subreddit. How did you like that, David?
I enjoyed it. I mean, so good to get an opportunity to interact with not just listeners, but also with Heat fans in general. You know, we get a lot of questions for our own podcast. We interact with them on Twitter, but we went beyond Twitter. We were just reaching a whole brand new audience and guys that were, I'm sorry, people that were really, really well informed and asked some really legitimately interesting questions, not just about the Heat, but about the league in general. And that was a lot of fun to address a lot of those questions. And we really appreciated the opportunity, that's for sure.
I love the AMA format because, you know, you hit the little refresh button and new questions would populate. And there was, like you said, like some questions about not just Heat related stuff. One question about, you know, who are your favorite players slash coaches to interview? That was a lot of fun. Just stuff about the league, stuff about Heat history, stuff about the Heat now, stuff about the Heat's offseason. It just like it covered so many different bases. I know you and I at least felt a little overwhelmed at first with how many questions just kind of poured in. And what I thought would take about, I don't know, 30, 45 minutes turned into a two-hour part of my day of just kind of going through and answering all. I think we answered every question there was, and hopefully we didn't miss any, but maybe a couple came in afterwards after we kind of closed it down. But, you know, it was a really fun couple hours for me. I'm assuming you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, again, you know, the questions about, like you mentioned, questions about the team composition, a lot of pro Deion Waiters comments.
Yes.
So clearly Deion and of course, by extension, our own impact is being felt across Heat Nation. So, you know, we brought Deion to the team and now everybody really appreciates him fully. So I'm glad to see that.
I made sure to shout that out on the Reddit AMA.
Of course.
You know, given how much we enjoy the mailbag that we do every week, and which is sort of that format. But, you know, obviously we do the mailbag on the podcast and people email the questions in. And then doing this Reddit thing, I think it's just, what's the next step? Just like an advice column? Like, what's next for us here?
Well, I mean, you know, a friend of the program, Ira Winderman, has his Ask Ira column pretty much daily, I think. So I think that's probably an extension of it. But, you know, this is certainly an appealing thing. I'm sure that you and I will look into several times over the offseason and even as the regular season progresses.
Yeah, definitely want to do another Reddit AMA. And the mods over there and everybody that helped facilitate it were awesome. Really, really helpful. So I'm sure we'll be doing it again. And it went well for everybody involved. So shout out to r/Heat, the Heat subreddit. That was a lot of fun. If you haven't gotten a chance to go through that thread, go ahead. It's still up there on the Heat subreddit page. You find the link in either of our Twitter accounts, the Locked On Heat Twitter account, or just go to Reddit and check it out because a lot of really interesting, fun stuff to talk about. But we got a show to do, and not a whole lot going on rumor-wise or what's going on with the Heat. And I know you and I have been watching a ton of playoff basketball, though, right?
Yeah.
And it sort of got us thinking, you know, we've got an eye towards the NBA. You and I are writing stuff every day about what's going on in the playoffs, but we also kind of have an eye towards, if you're the Heat and you're also watching these playoffs, which of course they are, what can you learn from these teams? Because we know that regular season basketball is different. It's a different animal than playoff basketball. Things change. You have to deal with a lot of different matchups and lineup changes, more of a chess game than checkers. And you're constantly adjusting. We're seeing lineup changes all the time. We're seeing star players kind of rise to the top of every game almost. It seems like Isaiah Thomas is taking over with 53 points. I mean, the numbers Russell Westbrook was putting up in that first series against the Rockets that they ultimately lost, but were just incredible. LeBron James is taking it to another level. It's just the star players kind of rise up, and the coaching becomes an even more important thing, I think. So for you, what has been the most important, maybe not the most important takeaway, but what has been your takeaway from these playoffs, maybe a wrinkle that you've kind of seen, or a trend, rather, that you've kind of seen throughout the first couple of rounds?
That's interesting, but I think we're starting to see, you know, the cream of the crop rise up. And really, like you pointed out, teams that are able to kind of dictate the flow of a particular mm-hmm. series. I think, you know, for all of Westbrook's individual, importance and impact, it was almost too great. I think, you know, the Westbrook issue is a divisive one, clearly among one of the top players in the league, although there are probably some critics that would point out to the fact that he's not. They just puts up a lot of gaudy numbers. But, you know, he changes the dynamics so much for his team in that he kind of renders everybody a little bit more innocuous. You know, they just kind of filter into the background as he takes over games. But at the same time, when they do have an opportunity to step up, more often than not, they don't. And so you wind up thinking, well, who has to take over the scoring lead? Who has to create something offensively? And of course, that falls to somebody like that. So it's an interesting balance. You can't just have the superstar willing to take over. You need to have these kind of, you know, players who step up and do that. And I don't know that Miami necessarily has that one central figure, right? That superstar right. that can dominate games. But I know one of the things that you and I definitely wanted to address, I think, was the lineups changing in the playoffs, specifically going a little bit smaller and coaches making that kind of adjustment throughout a course of a series.
Every team other than the Grizzlies that made an adjustment in the first round, at least, or even the second round, every team other than the Grizzlies, basically, their main adjustment was going smaller. We saw Toronto go with putting Valanciunas on the bench, starting Norman Powell, in a small mm-hmm. ball unit, and that was in the first round. And against the Cavaliers, now they're starting Serge Ibaka at the five and bringing Valanciunas off the bench.
Conversely, look, I mean, a lot of criticism goes to Greg Popovich for his first game performance against the Houston Rockets,
right,
where
not
he
going
refused.
Small.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he had the two big man lineup out there with LaMarcus and either Pau Gasol or Deadman, who's inexplicably tied to the bench. David Lee starting as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's weird how Popovich has refused to do this. And I know it's something that he's done in the past where he's kind of stubbornly held on to his guys and his lineups the way he sees fit. But clearly getting blown out in game one, maybe it forces his hands a little bit. I know that there's been some discussion about Kawhi Leonard playing the power forward position, you know, the right. stretch four, if you will. And it's not something we've seen a lot. We saw it for spurts in game one. But I think a lot of his Spurs fans are specifically hoping that he'll make that transition.
We saw Boston, you know, when they lost the first two games against the Bulls for getting destroyed and rebounding and on the boards, they didn't.
Gerald Green.
They started Gerald Green. They didn't double down on their whatever bigs that they had. You know, in that second game, they started whichever Zeller they have, Cody Zeller. No,
Tyler Zeller.
Jesus. They started Tyler Zeller in the beginning of the second half. That lasted a couple minutes before they yanked him. They realized that.
Do they have a Plumlee on there? Do they have a Plumlee on that roster?
I'm not sure. They should probably just find one.
It's Boston.
So, you know, even their adjustment, when everything maybe pointed towards you need to have somebody in there to stop Robin Lopez, they just went small, right? And this is what we saw with Miami do a few years ago against Indiana. You end up having to play Chris Bosh at center, and that's able to pull Roy Hibbert out of the paint. I mean, it's the new adjustment, it seems, is like when in doubt, go small. And so, you know, the 500-pound octopus in the room for the Heat is Hassan Whiteside. If you're paying somebody $25 million a year and the Heat get into the playoffs and they need to make an adjustment, I do wonder if you know, you have a player maybe like James Johnson if he resigns, or even Justice Winslow, who we saw play center in the playoffs in his rookie season against Toronto when Whiteside was injured. But if you have a healthy Whiteside and you're still struggling, is the move to kind of make him your Valanciunas and bring him off the bench so that you could start a more versatile player at the five? And those are the things I think the Heat are thinking about. And maybe that is something that increases James Johnson's value to them. Maybe they're willing to pay him a little bit more because they value that versatility so much.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, you know, we saw We saw Whiteside come off the bench last season. I know, I think that was a little bit of an aberration when they had Amara Stoudemire starting. And of course that changed once they entered into the playoffs, but you wonder, you know, a lot of that will probably be precipitated on, you know, individual matchups over the course of the season. We've seen Spoelstra be able to make those adjustments in the past when they go into the playoffs, but you wonder how he would have responded, whether or not Whiteside would have been willing to come off the bench. It's certainly something to consider, but, you know, considering what they're paying him, can they really afford that? I mean, it just seems – it's a tough question to answer, right, because it probably best suits Miami for him to come off the bench. But I think there are just such clear limitations from Whiteside. For all that he does well, there are also really stark limitations to what he can do, particularly in pick-and-roll situations, both offensively and defensively, that you wonder whether or not he'll be able to make the consistent adjustment during a playoff series. And if not, he'll wind up costing Miami big time.
You know – Whiteside's so interesting because they want him to try to play up on pick and rolls a little bit more than he does. And he got better as the year went on, but he was still inconsistent. And that's going to be, I imagine, still a focus for that coaching staff and Whiteside. But they also rely on him so much defensively just to protect the rim. So it allows their perimeter defenders to run guys off the line. And it kind of just it gives them that safety blanket behind them to know, okay, I could be really aggressive running guys off the three-point line because I know Whiteside's back there and he's going to scare guys from going straight to the rim. So at the very least, I'm probably just giving up an open mid-range shot. But you're right. I mean, he's not – he doesn't get down the court very fast and he's not necessarily fluid as far as moving the ball on offense, which is putting
That's
it lightly.
For sure.
And just out, you know, going small is one thing, but that a lot of teams going small, it's not really to match up against other teams' size. It's to match up against other teams' tempo. It's not even matching up against teams shooting a bunch of threes. It's just, you know, we keep saying that, or for a long time we've said that basketball slows down in the playoffs. It kind of seems like it's speeding up this season, right? I don't have like the average pace numbers in front of me. I don't know what it is exactly, but it just seems like, you know, you have the Cavaliers, the Warriors, the Rockets, you know, the Celtics, and then the Raptors when they were able to beat who'd they play in the first round? The Hawks? Who'd they play?
The Raptors? No, they beat Bucks.
The Bucks, that's right. They were able to actually outpace the Bucks. The Clippers couldn't win because they couldn't control the tempo against Utah, right?
Yeah.
It feels like tempo is so important. And when you have a guy like Whiteside, who can be dominant at times, but he just is just simply slow to get down the court, you might not be able to play a quick tempo, which seems to be what's in vogue and because it's so effective right now.
Well, I'm you know, the Chicago Celtics series is an interesting one because obviously – you know, Chicago was able to steal the first two games in that series. And a lot of that had to do with two things, I think. Obviously, Robin Lopez controlling the rebounding edge by a wide margin. He was a huge factor, even when they were going small. I mean, that Boston, that is, he was able to dominate that. Al Horford, for all that he does provide, has been questioned about his rebounding ability. He kind of plays more perimeter base at times. He's not necessarily going to out-rebound your starting center. And then also, of course, the other edge for Chicago was, you know, Rajon Rondo, who seemed to know exactly what Boston was going to do from one second to the next. And, you know, having that kind of player out there who could control the tempo. And I think that's what it is. It's not necessarily about making adjustments to the other teams, but setting the tempo yourself. And with a guy like Rondo kind of dictating the pace and with Robin Lopez able to make the biggest impact, it really seemed to shift in Chicago's favor. Of course, then Rondo goes down. So Boston makes the adjustments, and all of a sudden they sweep the last four games of the series. And, you know, and of course you have to take into consideration Isaiah Thomas and his tragedy off the court and how he was, you know, obviously impacted for the first two games of that series. But still, despite that, I mean, just as far as the on-court adjustments and things that we saw, I think clearly those are things. So I wonder, could Miami? This was a question we were actually asked in our Reddit feed earlier, but. How would Miami have fared against Boston? And I answered that I think they would have done pretty well. If just for that same thing, you know, with Whiteside in there, you would have been able to control the middle. You would have had the rebounding edge by a wide margin, I think. And I think Dragic would have been able to control the pace fairly well. And, you know, obviously with Magruder in there and guys like that, they would have been able to make whatever defensive adjustments were necessary. You wonder whether or not Dragic would have been able to kind of hinder Isaiah Thomas. Probably not. But I think that's an interesting one. Then you see
would have done a better job than who Chicago was rolling out. I didn't get a chance to answer that question on Reddit earlier, but
yeah,
I'm with you. I think the Heat could have beaten Boston, and
I agree.
You know, you think, you know, we talked about Whiteside this whole time, but he could have like 10x'd what Lopez was doing in that game. I mean, he could have just been dominant from start to finish, and we've seen that. You know, we saw flashes of that during the regular season this year and last year even. And you know, with everything that was going on with Isaiah Thomas, as unfortunate it was, he did seem a little slow in those first couple games. He did get it going, but when Rondo left, they just had nobody to throw at him, and right. Miami would have had multiple guys to throw at him. You know, even if Dragic wasn't able to limit him completely, you could have a guy like Josh Richardson to throw at him. Maybe sure. Waiters comes back for the playoffs and you can have him defend him. Magruder could have picked him up for a couple of possessions. I think they had guys who, even, you know, Tyler Johnson would have done a better job than Isaiah Cannon, right? Like, Chicago had nobody. And they could have fared pretty well. But the other series I looked at as far as if for the Heat kind of watching these playoffs and maybe looking for a more apt comparison, the Utah Jazz, by beating the Clippers, you know, they kind of proved, against the point that I made earlier, that you don't have to play really fast as long as you control the tempo, which is kind of what you were saying. If you've got a guy like Goran Dragic who can just control the tempo to whatever that comfort level is that the Heat want to play at, Dragic is really good at controlling the tempo and just making sure that the offense is in the right gear, or that the game even is just in the right gear, that they're going at the right speed. But then they also have a guy like Rudy Gobert, who they use almost the exact same way as the Heat use Hassan Whiteside. You could argue Gobert is probably better at that than Whiteside, but they're basically the same prototype player here. And they use them the same way Miami does, where you just plant them in the middle, perimeter guys run opponents off the three-point line, and he just protects the rim. And does he show a little bit on pick and rolls every once in a while? Yes, he does, but mostly he's there to protect the paint. Their starting lineup during the regular season was a big lineup. They started Derek Favors next to Gobert, and then they had George Hill at point guard, and then Rodney Hood and Gordon Hayward on the wings. But in the playoffs, they've switched down, playing Joe Johnson at the four, and then either Hood or Ingles at the three, and then Hayward and Hill in the backcourt. And I think that might be a good model for Miami to look at as far as playing with four perimeter guys with one true rim protector in the middle. I like the Utah model. They're not going to beat the Warriors, obviously. I don't know. The Warriors might sweep. They might go 16-0. Who knows? But they are at least – they've gotten through a round. They beat the Clippers, who I think the Clippers were favored in that round. They beat the Clippers. The Clippers had home court, and they beat them on their home court in a Game 7. I like that comparison. Can you watch the Jazz? I don't know how much Jazz you've watched in the playoffs. Can you watch them and say – you know what? That's a team that makes sense to maybe copy if you're the Heat.
Yeah, I see some things there. At the same time, though, I think they just play at a different pace than Miami does.
They play very slow.
They do. And I think Miami, particularly Goran and Dion, both like to push the ball up as quickly as possible. And so that changes things. So then you're kind of – you like you said, you're controlling the pace and making it quicker – but by the same time, that almost plays into what other teams in the playoffs are particularly strong at, you know, are particularly good at. And so I don't know that they're necessarily
tried to slow down the tempo in the playoffs. I wonder what Spoelstra's adjustments would have been, man.
Would you have gone to Whiteside? I mean, I was thinking about the Rolo thing against the Celtics. You know, he wasn't – it's not like they fed him the ball a lot. He was just really effective. He's got a better outside shot than Whiteside does. He doesn't call for the ball. He's got that sweeping hook shot that takes forever to unload. But a lot of his points just come off of being a hustler on the board. You wonder whether or not Whiteside would have been able to play a similar role of not necessarily demanding the ball much and still being able to make the most of limited touches. Would he have gotten a little surly? Would he have started to sulk? I mean, like Gobert. It's not like Gobert is being fed the ball a lot, even when he was injured, obviously. But he, when he's come back, he hasn't been demanding the ball a lot. And he's just a different player than Whiteside is. Whiteside, by virtue of his contract, by virtue of the team roster as currently constructed, he needs the ball in his hands. And I think the team is a little bit better when he's playing an efficient but tertiary role, you know, second, you know, behind Waiters and behind Dragic.
Even after the All-Star break, though, Miami was still in the middle of the league in pace. They actually are in the bottom half of the league, 18th in pace post-All-Star game.
Really?
NBA.com, yeah. It feels like they played faster because of the drive and kick game, but I don't think they got that many more possessions in an average game. I think they just moved the ball really well and got really good shots. But that's the thing, right, is when you're playing the best teams in the league and they're going small and you're playing a Cavaliers team that can put Channing Frye at the five and Kevin Love at the five and you're playing – or they even have Tristan Thompson, who is much more fluid moving than Whiteside is.
Yeah.
Or you're playing Boston, who could just put Horford or Olynyk at center. I wonder if you can maintain that pace, and that's really the big thing here. And that's why maybe you look at what was Utah's pace – Utah actually had – I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong thing. Miami was 18th in the league in pace at 97.4, and Utah was 29th. They were second to last in the league at nearly 94. So,
who was last?
Memphis.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then Milwaukee was third to last, and then when Toronto actually – that might be a litmus test. You know, Milwaukee was third to last. Toronto speeds up their game in the first round. And they're able to kind of wipe away the Bucks. You know, there's a lot of just we don't have the answers, obviously, right? Because there's no way to know. But if you're the Heat, you got to look at what's going on in the playoffs and say versatility is really important. Forwards who can play the five are really important, and you know, let's see how Utah is able to adjust. They got destroyed in their game one against the Warriors, who are the versatile, switchy, pace and space team, right?
Yeah.
What are Utah's adjustments in the playoffs? I think they're the most intriguing team to watch for Fear the Heat, because they're how do they shift down? Do they play Gobert less minutes? Do they try to match Gobert more up against second units? It's really interesting, and that's the big question, and the one that you've been alluding to is, is as dominant as Whiteside can be and as important as he is to the way the Heat are currently constructed, can you build a contender with a traditional five? And that's been the question that's kind of been hovering over the Heat organization, is can you build a contender with him? You look at all the top 11 scorers in the playoffs right now are perimeter players. You know, if you consider LeBron and Kawhi perimeter players, which the way that they're playing in these playoffs, they are perimeter players. And those are the guys leading teams in the postseason right now.
Yeah, it's a tough question to ask. I'm trying to think if there's any other more traditional center. What about Gortat in Washington? Does he provide a template that Hassan could follow?
Maybe, but the Wizards just looked outclassed in those first two games. I mean, they were leading almost. They almost won game two. They could have had game two, and you could argue they probably should have if a referee call goes a different way. But they were blown out in that fourth quarter when the Celtics amped it up. Gortat is an interesting – but even like John Wall's the guy leading that group, and then they also have Bradley Beal. Like they have the best – they have probably the second best backcourt left in the playoffs right now. I don't know, man. It's just – I wonder if you put Whiteside in the Gortat spot, if the Wizards are able to be better. That's like a thought experiment, because if you put Whiteside in that group, then all of a sudden Washington has like a third star to kind of go along with Wall and Beal. But can he play against the Celtics in this series? I don't know. The way the Celtics are playing. I don't know. And we saw the Heat do this again, where you have somebody as dominant as what Roy Hibbert was doing to them in the playoffs, and they were able to just go small and take them out of the paint. And yeah, you could get as many rebounds you want and get as many buckets as you want, but ultimately, that's taking the ball out of perimeter players' hands, and that's less three-pointers that you're probably going to be shooting, and that's you'll probably live with more two-pointers than you will three-pointers. I don't know, man. There's a lot of questions, and I guess if we're gonna start wrapping this up here pretty soon, it might be a fun way for Heat fans to kind of watch these playoffs and just keep that in mind, is how does Toronto match up against Cleveland? Because Cleveland is the team in the East. What is Washington doing against Boston? What does Utah do against Golden State? What do the Spurs do against Houston? Because those are the teams, that are currently winning those series. That is everything we think the future of the NBA is going towards. And if you're the Heat and you're trying to build a team that can win the next several years, you've got to have an eye on that. So
yeah, without a doubt. And then they seem poorly constructed, at least currently, to deal with it. I wonder, I mean, I just don't know if Whiteside, you know, we thought we had addressed that because of the success in the regular season. You know, he was playing so well, but now the playoffs have kind of shifted our mentality a little bit as to whether or not Whiteside's a guy that you can, you know, build around, at least, even if in a reduced role. You know, he's costing the team so much as far as his salary is concerned. You wonder whether or not they might look to move him. Is he still somebody that other teams find to be a valuable player? You know,
I think that you can play with Whiteside. I think you can. I feel like the Heat were really onto something with their defense this year. You protect the rim. You're able to be really aggressive. You're not going to have a Chris Bosh type center all the time. I mean, is there a Chris Bosh level 5 right now in the NBA right now who can blitz point guards and pick and rolls and then dart back on defense in time to protect the rim at the level he does? Like,
no.
Karl Anthony Towns might get there, but he's not even close to there yet. I don't know. Like, unicorns like Porzingis and Jokic, maybe in a few years they can get to that level, but Bosh was so good at it. That's what made that blitzing style so effective, was Bosh, because he was a lockdown defender. He was airtight with his rotations and his help defense. I don't see another center able to do that. Even Toronto is trying to do that with Serge Ibaka, and that always seems like a better theory than when it goes in practice. When the Thunder used to do it, when Orlando did it, and now when Toronto's doing it in the playoffs, he's not that good at playing the five. It's more of a theoretical, this sounds like it would work, but you've just got to be so airtight on those switches. You know, Draymond Green is actually really good at it, but he doesn't have the length that Bosh does. But so that they can't play with him at that position for 48 minutes a game or whatever, 35 minutes a game. But so that's why I think if you have a guy like Whiteside that could just protect the rim, and you're not switching everything defensively or blitzing everything defensively, but you're just having guys run everybody off the 3-point line and force them to the mid-range area, I really think the Heat were onto something with that. It's the same strategy, like I said, that Utah does. And Utah had the best defense in the league, or one of the best defenses in the league this last season. And that might be the most viable way to play defense in a league that is shooting more and more three-pointers. And if that's the case, maybe then you're able to control the tempo. If you have that and just a primo perimeter scorer, which I don't think the Heat have now, if you have that, might be something that works. So that's just that. I guess that's my feeling. That's kind of where I think the league is going. It might be Miami's best answer. So, All right.
Let's hear from our listeners. If they have an opinion on the matter, we want to hear from them. Remember to contact us via email or via Twitter. We'll always answer your questions, and we'd love to hear from you.
That's all we have today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, we appreciate you listening. If you're a new listener that joined us from Reddit, welcome. We're glad to have you. Keep listening. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, and rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Napa Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.